Support for this podcast and the following message come from American Express. Small businesses are what keep our community together, which is why it's so important to help them succeed. American Express has created a new platform that all small business owners can use to keep their dream alive. StandForSmall.com. They brought together 100 plus companies to provide offers and resources for things like shipping and deliveries, online solutions and marketing to help small business owners get back to doing what they do best. StandForSmall.com/podcast, powered by American Express.
Welcome to The John Roa Show, a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. This is Leading from Home, a special limited series where I'll be checking in with leaders and entrepreneurs from across the country on how they're dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. It's Monday, April 13th, 33 days since the pandemic began. This is only the sixth show of the podcast, even though it feels like it's been going for months. And I want to say how lucky I feel to be able to hold these conversations with entrepreneurs and leaders during a crisis like this. And I feel lucky because I feel inspired and motivated after every single conversation. Like everyone, I've had my personal rough patches and at times I've felt really down since being locked up indoors. But being able to talk to these leaders who are finding ways to overcome adversity, develop ways to thrive, and even find the good in a really shitty situation is really special to me. I'm also very humbled by the positive reaction to the podcast so far, and I hope you're feeling that same inspiration and motivation when listening to the show. To continue on the theme of inspiring leaders, today I'm talking with Alix Peabody, the founder and CEO of Bev, a beverage company in Los Angeles who makes a canned wine that's had an incredibly impressive start over their first year in the market. She had to overcome a lot of personal adversity to start the company. And then right as she's finding traction in one of the most competitive industries in the world, a global pandemic hits, and this first-time founder is now forced to rethink her own company and navigate this unprecedented situation. Well, it feels like I already know you, even though we've never met. Obviously,
I'm glad Izzy's doing better.
Yes, yeah. Isabel's better. So my sister, who works for Alix over at Bev, which is how I know Alix, and we've already been through a lot together. I feel like my sister was ill, and Alix was great in helping to support us during that time. And then I've obviously known a lot about your business through my sister and through following you guys, and think it's incredible what you've done and what you're putting together. And it's these conversations have been infinitely interesting to me because I've been an entrepreneur for 23 years now, since I was a child, and that's all I've done my entire life. And this is one of the first times I've not been running a company since I've been, you know, since I've can recall.
Good time to be not running a company.
But this is the weird part is that, you know, I can't imagine how difficult it would be if I was running a business right now. And that's why I'm doing the podcast, is to capture this. And for someone like yourself, you're new to the entrepreneurial game, from what I understand. This is your first venture. It's a hell of a first venture. I mean, you've raised big money from big, you know, venture capitalists. You have got all of these incredible influential people to subscribe to your mission and to your brand. You have been distributed across the country, and now you're trying to lead through a global pandemic. And so,
yeah,
so they told, what is
someone,
going on?
Someone told me that this makes you a wartime CEO.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know that I'm ready for that. I didn't even know I was ready to be a CEO in the first place.
For sure.
So that's definitely been interesting. But I mean, where do you even want me to start? There's so much, because my industry in particular is an interesting one, right? Because most industries right now are just, the markets are shit, they're tanking, things are kind of all up in the air. But for us, we're in food and beverage,
yeah,
right? And so people are going to the grocery store, they're stocking up, they're drinking at home. We're starting to see, you know, spikes in different purchasing behaviors, which is really interesting because a lot of people want to order online because they don't want to go to the store, which is, before now, it was something that was a little tough to drum up. But that said, you know, I would say where we're most affected, like most startups, is just access to capital, for growth, right? And so a lot of the growth plans that we had and a lot of sort of the expansion plans that we had, I've had to take a really, really good look at the business and say, you know, basically have the discipline to be like, we're not doing it. Yeah. And because I want to make sure that we have the money and the bandwidth to get through this, however long that takes, which was a difficult call, you know, but especially as an entrepreneur, you're kind of a risk person, generally yeah. speaking. So we tend to, you know, fly a little closer to the sun than most people are comfortable with, knowing that we'll, you know, we'll figure it out on the other side. But I think it's been a blessing in many ways for me as a CEO, and it's forced me to grow up and look at my business in a way that I've never had to before, which probably should have been, but wasn't. And I think it's something that, you know, a lot of people learn when they've suffered a big failure or their company's really struggled through something or something like that. It's kind of the types of changes that I've had to look at and had to make, and the difficult decisions that I've had to make are ones that I believe people usually learn a little later in their career.
And talk about that, because this is a theme that I've been hearing, is that it's kind of forced reflection, right? Like normally we move so quickly as entrepreneurs that there's no time to stop and think. We you know, you are going 24/7. And if you said, I'm going to take a week to reflect on the state of my business, you'd probably go out of business. But this has forced you to do that, to look at these things in ways that you wouldn't have before. So how does that affect you? What decisions are those? And do you think it's ultimately going to make Bev a better company?
For sure, it's going to make Bev a better company. You know, when this all started to go down, one of my investors said something to me that was eye-opening and really kind of changed my perspective. He said, this is your opportunity to turn this into the company that you actually want, not the one that you feel you've been pushed to have.
Wow.
And which I thought was really interesting. And there's been, you know, I think when you're, you get on that VC train and you get, you know, that venture money, and suddenly there's growth targets that people want you to hit, and you have to just, you know, up the valuation and spend to raise. There's a lot of that that starts to happen. And for me, you know, we run a CPG company that has healthy margins, that many people have built businesses never having raised money. Not necessarily in alcohol. Alcohol is a specific piece, but with a business like ours and margins like ours, there's no real reason that it can't be sustained and grow slowly like many other companies and brands have in the past. And I think for me, it almost gave me permission to say, you know what, maybe I don't even want to be on that treadmill. And how would I build this thing differently if I weren't building it for the next raise, but I was building it to be self-sustaining, to get as quickly to profitability as I possibly could? And what would I do differently than what I've been doing? And the answer was a lot.
Oh, wow.
Right. And I think we're lucky in that we've had the capital to set us up in a, you know, especially in alcohol. It's such an old boys club. There's so many, you're up against Budweiser, Diageo, these people print money. So there's a lot of capital that goes into just simply being set up with a distributor, just simply getting on the shelf takes money.
Yeah.
But this hit us almost at a lucky point where we are starting to roll out onto shelves in a real way. We're starting to get that footprint in a real way. And so, you know, we're starting to take that turn from a company that's just trying to get on the shelf to a company that's trying to move off it. And I think we can build a business off of that. And I think that's something that kind of dawned on me. And it was almost like a reprieve. It was permission to say, like, maybe I don't want that treadmill.
Wow.
Which is something that I haven't felt before.
That's an incredible insight, because the treadmill is a great analogy to, I think, what so many of us feel in the early stages of these companies. And, you know, I had a conversation with my old COO, and I ran a big tech company back in the day. And we were like, what would we have done? Would we have survived this? And we weren't really sure, because we were, you know, if we were deeper into that company, it would have been, I think, catastrophic, if not a pivot that would have led to entirely different outcomes and circumstances. And so it's so inspiring to hear people that are finding kind of the value in such a tragic and kind of insane time. And not only just for your business itself, but you guys are branching out. You're trying to help other people. I know you have a fund you're raising for service workers in LA. So tell us about what you're doing outside of kind of the four very pink walls of Bev.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I don't get to be in the pink walls of Bev, which makes me sad. But, right now. But yeah, so I mean, the other thing too about this industry is that it's such a team effort, right? It's everyone from your distribution partner to the buyer at the store or that bartender, you know, the cashier or the person who's like working those aisles is the most important person in your whole business, right? And I think, first of all, you know, they work hard all the time. And I think it's a cool time to see those people get noticed, people in the food chain who never even got, they've just been looked over, right? And in our business, they're the most important person. When you go up to the wine buyer or the bartender and you're like, what should I get?
Yeah.
That's the person that's making the sale for us a lot of the time. And so I think this is there are so few restaurants and so few bars that are going to survive this, which is so, so tragic. And these are the people that have been behind us since the beginning and actually helped us be able to move our, you know, this brand new product that they don't have a real reason to try. So we've been, we did start a workers' relief fund in LA as a business. We've been giving our profits from online sales towards that and matching what we can. I mean, we're still a startup.
Sure,
we still need to be able to survive as well. But we've matched about $3,000, I think, for the workers' relief fund as well. And then we haven't made it yet. We're about to, because I think all the ingredients arrive starting tomorrow, which is exciting. But we're starting to make hand sanitizer for our local communities as well and for our distributors. Because if you think about, you know, the people who are actually getting the food to the stores, our case, food to the stores, they're touching stuff. They're out there all the time. And there's a huge shortage of that. So we were able to get ethanol from our suppliers, which is great. And we're going to be mixing some of that ourselves, which will be an interesting dynamic. Our supply chain is not exactly set up to be a hand sanitizer company. My ops team was really thrilled when I told them that that's what we were doing next.
Yeah.
But no.
Well, it's amazing.
But stuff like that, I mean, whatever we can, you know.
It's great. And it's so important to step up and to hear small companies doing that, right? Like, it's one thing for some billionaire to give away a few bucks out of their pocket towards either making an impact or getting a headline, whichever one that they're after. But for a small company to step up is pretty great. And a quite new small company. You guys are how old now?
Well, so technically we're about 2.5, three years old almost. But, you know, the first year wasn't, it was just me. We were really funded for the first time last April, about a year ago to the date. So I would say in reality, we're about a year old.
You're a year old and you're in a market that couldn't be more competitive, which you've already addressed with these big, you know, behemoths that have run this for decades. And you're doing a product that I'm sure we've all wanted to do, right? Who doesn't want to create a wine or a spirit, and who hasn't sat and said, I wish I could just do this. And you just went and not only did it and then raised money and you're on shelves all in this short amount of time. So how did that actually happen, to kind of go back to when you just thought, I'm going to go do this, to actually making all this insanity work and take place?
Yeah. Well, it's actually one day at a time is the answer really, but it's actually kind of funny because I had a session with my team about how I think through highly ambiguous problems recently to try to help them figure it out. And I do a lot of mind mapping. Mm-hmm. So basically, you know, write Bev on a piece of paper with a whole bunch of lines and it looks like a mess. And actually there's one right here, that kind
there
of thing.
Go. Yeah.
And then which people can't see, but it looks like a mess basically.
Yeah.
I do that to try to break hugely ambiguous problems into actionable steps. And so for me at the very, very beginning, it was, I'm talking, and I feel like a lot of people don't talk about this part because it's like, oh, well, I started and I did, you know, this on the other thing, but I'm talking, it was like, find supplier. Okay. Next, like, contact everyone I've ever met in wine, like pick up the phone, like incorporate who, how do I do that?
Right.
Find a lawyer. Like, it was very just like step by step, but you know, but on a bigger scale, I mean, I spent every single penny that I had actually out of my 401k to buy our first round of products. And then I just used that. Actually, I wasn't licensed at the time, so I had them technically sell it to me as a direct to consumer sale. So I couldn't sell any of it.
Yeah.
So I used it to fundraise and just like threw it at a bunch of parties where I knew people would be. And then a couple days later would, you know, start talking to angel investors and they're like, oh my gosh, that's everywhere. I love that stuff.
Right.
And just making yourself seem a little bigger than you are at the beginning, which I think is a trick entrepreneurs realize, especially when they have to raise money.
Yeah.
Yeah, required for the job.
and you had to overcome a lot of adversity in starting the business as well.
Yes. Well, which adversity?
Whatever ones you want to talk about. I've read a bit about this, and my producer sent over a quote that you said, which is that you have a relatively high pain tolerance, which is great for, as an entrepreneur. So like what was some of that pain, some of that adversity when you first got started?
Yeah. So I had some health problems right before I started the business, and was in and out of the hospital for like 18 months. I had 6 different surgeries. They were all fertility related problems. And, So I lost my right ovary over the course of those surgeries. And it was actually funny. The first time I went in, I feel like this is just a thing that happens with women in general, small tangent, but you know, what I had was an ovarian torsion in my right ovary, and it was what should be the size of a walnut was about the size of a grapefruit. My stomach was like literally descended. You could almost see it from the outside, but I'd gone to SoulCycle that morning. And so my doctors were like, oh, no, you would be puking. Like you wouldn't, there's no way you'd be able to like go to a spin class if that were the case.
Right.
And then turned out, you know, that was the case. And I had been sort of intermittently doing that for quite some time. So that was where I learned that I have a decently high pain tolerance. But I think, you know, there's that. And then this is a very difficult industry to raise money for a bunch of reasons. One, it's so tight knit. It's such an industry that's, you know, it's plug and play if you're in it. And if you're not, it's damn near impossible. And so there was that. And then on top of it, you know, so it's very hard to get funding for it if you've never done it before. And most places that invest actually in CPG, they want to see numbers and growth, et cetera, first. But I didn't have any of those relationships. So when I went out and started looking more at venture funding, because, you know, the dream that I have is bigger than beverage specifically, a lot of the venture capitalists can't invest in this space because they have endowment money or they have, you know, money from families that don't believe in alcohol consumption or anything like that. So that part was really tricky as well. So, you know, it was kind of like, hi, my name is Alix. Yes, I want to start a company in the hardest industry possibly in America, other than health, you know, other than medical devices.
Right.
Like, will you give me money to do it? And people are just, they look at you like you have 6 heads at first.
Right.
But you just have to find the one person who believes that you're crazy enough to actually make it work.
That is a great quote and a great premise to entrepreneurship in general. This pandemic, there's been a lot of talk about businesses going every direction. And even though I'm assuming there's more nuance to this, you know, you look at what you guys are doing and it looks like you guys are just crushing it, right? Like, I mean, you've had these, you know, you've had Jennifer Garner and other celebrities been posting about your product and supporting it. You know, the social media makes it look like you guys have everything figured out. I'm guessing that isn't quite the case. And I'm guessing, you know, and you alluded to it earlier. And so I want to hear a little more about like some of the reality versus perception of like a moment like this with a company that is high flying, but there's probably also a lot of kind of work to do on the home front.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, any company you look under the hood and it's a hot mess in one way or another. And we're definitely no different. I think, like I said, there's, how do I frame it properly? I mean, I think there's so many things that we have been doing and were doing that I suddenly felt relieved from. So for example, so much field marketing, things like events like Coachella and Stagecoach, and these things are expensive to activate, really expensive. And we're talking like the cost of a person's job, you know? To go to one event, the amount of money that we've raised in total is the amount that Red Bull spends on like one afternoon, one party in one city. Right. So, putting that into perspective. And I think, you know, there were some tough decisions that had to be made. Like there was, you know, a market that really wasn't performing to the degree that it needed to be, and it had to be shut down. You know, there have been expansions that you know, new markets that we've been excited to go into that we've had to say, you know what, we just need to focus where we are and get that velocity through the door. And I think, you know, on top of that, it's how do you take a strategy that you've spent, you know, 2 months developing and then it's exploded, right? Like so much of what we do is getting, you know, we call it cans in hands, getting people to try the product for the first time and top the battle. And so you're out in the field, you're doing all sorts of stuff. How do you convince somebody to buy something online or at a store and stock up on it when they've never even tried it before, you know? And so that, there's a lot of that that kind of has to go into it. And I think, you know, from a social media perspective, that's the marketing team, but then there's also the sales team, and then there's also operations. There's, you know, we're lucky also because we're considered essential business, or we're part of food, right? But there was a moment there where I was like, is our supply chain going to get shut down? You know, what happens if someone decides like wine isn't that essential? I mean, that probably won't happen, but, and you know, and then just uprooting every single plan that we've had and having to completely pivot and figure out, you know, there was a budget that we had for every month, and now that budget is maybe a tenth of what it is to make sure that there's enough money to get us all the way through, you know, 2021.
What do you think is going to happen to companies that come out of this successfully? Because, you know, to your earlier point, whether they're in any industry, we're going to have fallout, we're going to have companies that don't survive. The companies that do, what is your prediction on the state of affairs, on their velocity, on their kind of options for doing business? Like what is your prediction in, call it, 90 days from now for companies who survive?
Yeah, I think that the companies that survive this are going to be the companies that survive, period, in a big way. And I think the companies that make it through such a critical downturn, there's so much that's going to shake out. There's so much that's going to be seen in terms of, okay, you can have a whole bunch, like you can have a very, very high top line, but you're spending tons of money to acquire those customers, and you might as well be like sending them cash, right? There are a lot of businesses that can look like that, especially when you get into fancy ones that are very well funded. And I think what's going to come out of this is we're going to see who has actual paths to profitability. What are sustainable businesses? What are businesses that could grow to be, you know, to stand on their own 2 feet versus sort of gunning for an acquisition like many tend to do? I think it's going to separate, you know, frankly, like real businesses from not real businesses in a very big way. And I think kind of if you can make it through this time, you can probably just make it, period. Awesome. And I think those businesses are going to be extraordinarily valuable. So when we're one of them, I hope I have faith, but, you know, that's kind of what I see going forward.
That's awesome. And where do you see the company by the end of 2020 with what you know now, with including the shakeup, including the disturbance and all of our workflows? Where do you see Bev in, you know, 6-9 months?
You know, I think this time more than ever, it's a really important time for us to showcase who we are. I think the decisions that people make now are decisions that are going to define them for the long term, you know, both from an economic perspective and from a culture perspective, right? And, you know, so for example, I mean, some of the stuff that we've had to do is consider, like many other companies, like, should we cut some people? Should we not? And the decision that I made was I might have to cut salaries, but I'm going to guarantee no layoffs for the team, right? And when I had that conversation with them, to be totally frank, I had no idea how scared people were of that every day and how distracting it was. You know, and I think that's something that a lot of CEOs and entrepreneurs, you're worried about your business, but it's easy for you to forget that you're going to be the last one that's still plugging away, right? And so you're not necessarily worried about, are you going to have something to do tomorrow? And I think, you know, those types of decisions, they're difficult and they're commitments, but they're really going to define who you are and how you handle tragedy. So anyway, so I hope, you know, 6-9 months from now, we've really kind of shown not just ourselves and each other what we're capable of. I also like joke with them. I'm like, we're Sparta right now. Okay. So you gotta like hold your shield just as hard as your sword. But you know, it's also going to define us hopefully to the outside world and who we are and what we care about, and, you know, and be able to spread that message in a way that's not distracting, because there are only so many mediums through which we can do it right now.
For sure. It's awesome. I'm so happy for you guys. It's been a lot of fun to watch over the last, you know, year, and it'll be more fun to, I think, watch in the coming year as, you know, to see how companies battle through this, to see the decisions that you guys make and the success that you find, you know, going through one of the probably toughest bouts of entrepreneurial adversity that I can imagine. As I said earlier in the conversation, I could not, you know, I've been through a lot as an entrepreneur, you know, more than my fair share, I feel. And I've never had to lead through a global pandemic. So this is just like, holy shit.
Most of us have not. It is crazy. I mean, that's the other thing one of my friends said to me, that, you know, who's also an entrepreneur. And I think preparing people emotionally for the fact that this is, while it seems far away because we are all at home, it's going to get closer and closer. Mm-hmm. People, you know, will get sick. You know, many will die. I've had people that, you know, that are in my sort of family networks that have passed away. And I think acknowledging and understanding how scared people really are and leading with that compassion first is going to be so critical for entrepreneurs to keep their team's morales up and to keep them focused on what they, you know, what they're trying to build. You know, it's just the compassion is so important, and understanding that, you know, being strong for your team also means having to be strong for yourself. And that can be tough sometimes, but making sure that you're really building them up is going to be the most important, and just understanding where they are, you know, and that people are scared, and some of them are going to be scarier than you, and they're not going to want to tell you.
Right. Yeah,
so,
You
know, and so just knowing that and leading with that, I think is really important.
That's awesome. That's a great message. And, you know, you're obviously, you know, a great leader for the company, with a great product and a great mission for the company as well.
I try my best, but of course, we're all doing our best,
which is all we can do. And especially for somebody who's doing this for the first time. I mean, it's very impressive with your mindset and what you've accomplished and everything else. And as I just said, the product is incredible. And I'm assuming those who are listening, especially the ones in LA, would love to get involved and probably try it. So how do they do that? Where can they find you? How can they support you? How can they buy the product?
For sure. Well, it's 0 grams of sugar. So that's great. Relatively guilt-free, kind of. we have a rosé, a Sauvignon Blanc, and a Pinot Grigio. And in LA, you can buy us at BevMo, AVP, that's like industry lingo, Albertsons, Vons, Pavilion, Safeway, Total Wine, and more. We're on Drizzly as well, which is easier. And we actually ship, and if you're in Texas, at HEB and Total Wine and More as well. Mm-hmm. And we actually ship direct to consumer into 44 different states. So it does not matter really where you are. You can always order online. And like I said, those profits are going to our workers' relief fund out in Los Angeles.
Awesome. And the website is drinkbev.com, I think.
Yes, drinkbev.com.
Yep.
We're also doing stuff like fun virtual happy hours every Friday. So if you want to follow us at drinkbev, get a little dose of happy during all of this. Yeah, please do.
Awesome. So good to talk to you. I look forward to meeting in person at some point here coming up.
I know. I know. Eventually, when we're all out of here, it'll happen. I'm in New York a lot.
Definitely. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun to have you back on the podcast in the summer when we're actually doing this for real here in the studio instead of these FaceTime calls. But in the meantime, stay well and keep being a great leader. You know, I know my sister's had a great time, you know, working with you in the company. I know that Margot joined your team workout the other day. I heard.
So. Yes. We have virtual team workouts on Wednesday morning. So yeah, she did very well in her princess outfit.
It was so funny.
Fantastic.
Awesome. So cute. Great to talk to you, and keep us updated on how things are going. Look forward to following it on social media, and we'll speak to you soon.
You too. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Luke. Bye. A big thanks to Alix for being on the show today. Bev has the trifecta: a great product, great people, and a great mission. So go check them out online and get some rosé ready for the beach whenever we're allowed to go back. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe, leave a review, and share with a friend. 100% of the profits from this limited series will be donated to charities that are helping people through the pandemic. If you're currently leading from home, or if you're an entrepreneur looking to get some advice or to talk through something, I want to hear from you. Head over to roa.com/podcast. That's roa.com/podcast for ways to connect with me. or hit me on social media at John Roa. The John Roa Show is a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. For more podcasts from us, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows. A special thanks to my producers, Jordan Gaspore here at the show, and Tyler Klang over at iHeartMedia. We'll be back with you on Wednesday. In the meantime, stay safe out there.
What's up? I am Machine Gun Kelly, and look, I know Halloween is going to suck this year because there's no trick-or-treating and all that, but I've got a treat. There's a musical podcast that I made with my friends 24K Golden, Ian Dior, and Dana Dentata, and Satan. Well, Satan's not my friend, but Tommy Lee is, and Tommy Lee is playing Satan. But don't just take it from me. Tell him, Satan.
Thanks, dude. It feels great to be playing Satan on this podcast. Listen to Halloween in Hell on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or whatever you get your podcasts on.